This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Stanley Cup Playoffs game day. Much more to come on the Jets and the Blues series. Game 6 goes tonight here on TSN Radio 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us in studio. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 1290. The standard messaging rates do apply on our website, but the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From WFAN Radio in New York, we're pleased to welcome to the program Andy Graziano. He is their Islanders reporter. Andy, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Morning, Ezra. How you doing, sir?
Doing very well, Andy. How about yourself?
I'm well. I'm good.
Andy, that's actually Drew. I just want to clarify. I'm the better looking one, so that was actually Drew that was talking there.
Yeah. They've always told me I have a face for radio. So
yeah, I'm the smarter one. I'm not sure if Ezzy's the better looking one. Then we all have trouble. And Dave is the wily one, as they like to say.
I'm the simple son.
Andy obviously brought you on to talk about the Islanders, a 4-0 series sweep over the Pittsburgh Penguins. Certainly up there with a stunning result. I'm not surprised the Islanders won the series, but to win so in four games certainly was surprising. How does Barry Trotz sort of, you know, build on that? They're obviously going to have a significant period of time off. What's Barry Trotz doing to mitigate that time away from the rink and the time away from game competition for this Islanders team?
Yeah, you know, that's always the challenge when, you know, you kind of think of when they swept the Penguins. And I do think there was a lot of people took offense to what Mike Sullivan said post-game when he spoke about how the series was a lot closer than it actually looked to the eye. There is some truth to that, I think. There was a couple of tight games. Islanders kind of only trailed for 5 minutes the whole series, which was incredible to me. And in my series preview, I had the Islanders winning in six, so I knew they could beat the Penguins, but I don't think anyone ever foresaw a sweep in that situation. And to hold Sidney Crosby the way they did down was just remarkable defensive effort. In terms of what they're doing to prepare for round two, it's really just more of the same. You know, Barry gave them 2 days off following the sweep. They got a couple of guys that are banged up, Cal Clutterbuck and Scott Mayfield. As you guys probably heard, they just announced that they lost Johnny Boychuk for 3 to 4 weeks with a broken bone, either in his leg or his ankle. We really don't know because Lou doesn't divulge that kind of information, and if anybody leaks it, they feel his wrath. So that's going to be a little bit of a blow, but I think right now they're back to work. They're back on the ice. I think Barry said that he has a scrimmage scheduled in the next couple of days, which is something that John Tortorella has also done in Columbus to keep his guys sharp following their stunning sweep of the Tampa Bay Lightning. So I think it's going to be really more the same. Just continue to kind of, there's really not much Barry can do at this point, right? He's not going to ingrain anything new ahead of round two. It's just going to be really more the same. That suffocating defensive style that the Islanders have played all season long. You know, first team in 100 years to go from worst to first in goals against with Robin Lehner and Thomas Greisch is going to share the Jennings Trophy for that accomplishment. So really it's just going to be more the same, maybe get a scrimmage in there, keep the guys sharp, and just wait on the Capitals and the Hurricanes to complete.
You know, Andy, just going back again to the series, Islanders over the Penguins. You know, anybody that listens to the show, and Drew and Dave know this, I mean, one of my favorite lines for so many years has been Casey Cizikas, Cal Clutterbuck, and Matt Martin. Obviously, Martin, you know, went to the Leafs, but then when he came back, Barry Trotz put him right back on that line with Cizikas and Clutterbuck. And I just wanted to ask you to talk about how important that line was against the Penguins, because when you're talking about that line, it's not like they were out there for 8-9 minutes a game. I mean, they were out there for 11, 12, as much as 19 minutes a game. So just how big of an impact did that line have against the Penguins?
Yeah, it was absolutely tremendous. It was a little kind of shocking to me, not a huge shocker, but a little bit of a shocker that maybe I thought Cizikas could have maybe squeaked in there a little bit for a Selke nod. He was really that good this year at both ends of the rink. I mean, in terms of that line, it's just it's incredible chemistry that they have, and it goes back. I remember being on with Dangle last summer after the, you know, John Tavares saga, and then Lou Lamoriello reacquires Matt Martin in a trade, and you know, Toronto kind of looked at that like, oh my God, I'm so glad we got rid of Matt Martin. I can't believe somebody traded for him. And I remember saying at that time, when Matt Martin left, it was a huge, huge piece of that locker room. And, you know, everyone's so focused on what happens on the ice that I think what happens off the ice is often overlooked and just as important. And he really took a big piece of chemistry when he left with him. So when he came back, I kind of knew that that was going to be a real big turning point in the room. You know, we obviously know what Matt Martin brings on the ice and what he doesn't, but in the room, it's so crucial. And I remember talking to him a couple of weeks into the season about reuniting that fourth line with him, Casey, and Cal, and he put it so simply to me. He just said, you know, look, Andy, we're just having fun. We just have so much fun playing with each other. And, you know, off the ice, him and Casey are really, really close as well. So that obviously helps. But, yeah, you look at a line, you know, the Islanders have never in the been a team that's relied too much on their first line. Primarily, let's be honest here, because of talent, right? They've always had to spread out their ice time. So I never kind of looked at the Islanders as first line, second line, third line, fourth line, especially with, as you said, that fourth line getting, you know, 13 minutes a night, and in some games upwards of 18 or 19 for certain players, especially the ones that play the penalty kill like Cizikas does. But when they called them, you know, when Don Cherry anointed them the best fourth line in hockey, I don't think there's really much argument in that. My son, who's ironically a Rangers fan, don't ask. we were watching the sweep of the Penguins, and it got to game three, and he just looks at me, and the fourth line was out there doing their normal thing, kind of buzzing around, just keeping the puck in the offensive zone, just cycling and cycling, and he just looks at me and he goes, I can't believe what I'm seeing. Goes, I've never seen a fourth line be able to command the offensive zone like that. Like, you always think of them as strictly defensive specialists, spending most of their time in the defensive zone. But it's just incredible chemistry that they have. They love playing with each other. And I think, again, if you really go deep into it and think about off the ice rather than on the ice, the chemistry is a huge, huge part of what the Islanders were able to achieve this season and are still achieving for now.
Andy, just one quick question, another question, sorry, on the fourth line. And I could talk to you about this line for 20 minutes. I love this line. You know, none of these three players had any points in that series against Pittsburgh. And the question I was going to have for you is, how unique is that? And is that going to maybe make other coaches around the NHL maybe reevaluate how they use their fourth line? Because as you said, I mean, they're known as defensive specialists, even though, you know, Cizikas, I think, had 19 goals during the regular season. But are other coaches maybe going to reevaluate that? Because this line, even though they didn't have any goals or assists, I mean, they had a huge impact against the Pens.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of that, you kind of, when you play in the Islanders, it's real easy. I mean, you think it's easy. You sit back and you're kind of pregaming for them, and you're like, okay, well, we got to stop the Matt Barzal line. That's obvious. And you got to watch out for Brock Nelson, who's had a terrific season. And then you kind of roll out a third line, and you're kind of like, all right, you know, Filppula, Komarov, Beauvillier, you know, good players, but not really a line that we should be too concerned with. And then how do you even game plan for a fourth line that does that to you, that just dumps the puck in and just cycles you to death and just hits you to death? And there's no coincidence that Barry Trotz starts almost every game with this fourth line, because they're the trend, you know, they're the setters of pace for the whole game, and that's why he usually starts a game with them nine times out of ten.
Andy Grant, sorry.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I think other teams in the league are definitely going to have to reevaluate kind of what the term fourth line means. You know, the Islanders only had three guys with 20 or more goals this year. Anders Lee led the club with 28. Brock Nelson had 25. Casey Cizikas had 20. That's just incredible for me for a fourth line player.
Andy Graziano is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He is the WFAN Radio Islanders reporter. The Islanders into the second round, having defeated the Pittsburgh Penguins 4-0.
You know, Andy, and speaking of into the second round, we know the shift will go from Nassau Coliseum to Barclays Center. What kind of impact do you think that it's had? I know I saw some politicians in New York were writing letters trying to get him, you know, to lobby to get it back at Nassau. But do you think it's going to have any sort of impact on the series?
I honestly don't. And, you know, I tweeted this out after the Islanders swept the Penguins, because that was the big talking point, right? Because that's basically what social media, especially Twitter, does. It goes quickly on to the next thing, right? Mm-hmm. And tends to take things and just blow them way out of proportion, in my opinion. And that's another thing that's blown out of proportion. The Islanders this year had almost identical records at each arena. They had 12 wins at Barclays Center. They had 12 wins at Nassau Coliseum. It's it's fully known and understood that Barclays wasn't built for hockey. We can talk for talk on that for days. It was strictly an NHL decision based on financials, and that's the bottom line. You know, the Coliseum, when it was renovated, wasn't really renovated. It was just kind of they put a piece of tinfoil around it, spruced up the inside a little bit, and that was it. It still was stuck with the 13,000 seat capacity and shortage of luxury boxes. So it's all about money. And at the end of the day, fans can have their complaints all they want, and they will, and most of them are justified. In terms of the Barclays quote-unquote experience, but they'll show up. They'll show up just like they did a couple of years ago in the series against Florida and Tampa. They'll be there 16,000 strong. It'll be loud. It doesn't quite have the same feel and intensity as the Coliseum. It never will, but the place does get loud when it's full, and I think the players are expecting that again. There's no doubt that the players would rather play at Nassau Coliseum. There's no question about that. But also understanding the financial aspect of it, and the NHL is a business after all. That letter that the politicians are, they can write letters all they want. You know, Gary Bettman's just not going to throw away luxury box money, between Barclays and the Coliseum. In terms of play on the ice, again, I don't think it's going to have any factor. I think the Islanders win or lose round two against either Washington or Carolina based on how they play, not where they play.
Andy, last question for you. Andy Graziano covers the New York Islanders for WFAN Radio. Andy, you know, you look at the Islanders' blue line, and there's a lot of guys there who really aren't what I would describe as household names. You mentioned Johnny Boychuk. He's probably got, you know, some of the most notoriety from his time, certainly with the Islanders and before that with the Bruins. But Ryan Pulock has been sort of the stud on the back end for the Islanders. He's averaging just under 23 minutes a game in that first-round sweep of the Penguins. We know him here in Winnipeg because he's from nearby Dauphin, Manitoba.
Yep.
This player, you know, this is a guy who's a former first-round pick. Are we seeing him sort of this season being his breaking out party, his coming out party? Almost 40 points this year in the regular season, playing all the big minutes, playing all the tough minutes. Is this his breakout season of a former first-round pick?
Absolutely. There's no question in my mind that what you're seeing is, and you just said it perfectly, right? I mean, there's no household names back there outside of the experience of Johnny Boychuk, who, and the Islanders are going to miss that experience greatly in the second round. I'm not going to diminish that at all. You have Nick Leddy, who, you know, was on a cup-winning Chicago team back there, but again, not technically a household name. Ryan Pulock has just, I mean, Barry Trotz started leaning on Ryan early in the season, and the Islanders brought Ryan along very slowly. You know, we were all kind of waiting, you know, for them to kind of give him his full-time shot. And it probably took longer than expected, but that's the Islanders' way. They tend to be a lot more leery at this point of rushing prospects along. We saw it with Michael Dalcol this year as well. So it took Ryan a little bit longer for him to get his opportunity. And when he did, he struggled a little bit defensively, which is kind of normal. I consider defense to be the hardest position for a young player to master in the NHL. But once he got going and Barry Trotz started leaning on him and giving him additional responsibility, I was more impressed this season with how Ryan developed defensively rather than the 40 points he chipped in offensively. We always knew his offensive game was going to be there. We know he's got the booming shot. But how he grew defensively and how he handled that Sidney Crosby line in that first round was just magnificent. And I think you're seeing Ryan develop into a perennial all-star for me over the course of his career. And then you look at what they did with Devin Toews, who finally got an opportunity this year to come up and play some big minutes. And he also factored into this first-round sweep of the Penguins by having a terrific series. A couple of ups and downs, which was expected. But, you know, the Islanders going forward are in pretty good shape on the blue line, especially when you consider they still have Noah Dobson in the pipeline. I don't think defense is going to be a position that you're going to have to worry about for very long in New York, and especially if they continue to master Trotz's system. Who knows where this team can go, right? We're looking at, if you look at the last two playoffs, right? So in 2017, the only teams that swept in the first round were Nashville and Anaheim. They ended up in the conference finals with Nashville going to the Stanley Cup. In 2018, Vegas and San Jose were the only two teams to sweep in their first round, and Vegas was pretty much the story of the league, of sports at that point. So I think Islander fans are sitting back right now, and especially with the elimination of the Lightning and last night the Flames, this race for the Cup is wide open this year, and fans are sitting back thinking, hey, why not us? So And I don't think that's too far-fetched right now, to be honest.
Andy Graziano covers the New York Islanders for WFAN Radio. Andy, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Andy.
Thanks a lot, Andy.
When we come back, we look at the Western Conference playoff races. The Flames capitulated to the Avalanche last night. They're out. The Lightning are out. We know that. And the Sharks and the Golden Knights, they're going to Game 6 on Sunday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets, Stanley Cup Playoffs Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Comes Durant and shot, saved by Smith, rebound, score, scored by Durant. He picks it up from behind the net and he throws it off Smith's backside.
Back to Tyson, Berry it goes. Mikko, back to Berry, take the one-timer, shot, score!
Mikko Rantanen on the one-timer! He somehow gets it inside the post! Second goal of the game, fifth of the postseason.
Courtesy of our friends at Altitude Sports in Denver, the Avalanche go into Calgary last night. They just absolutely dominate the Flames. It's a 5-1 final. They lost game one, then they won the next four, and boy, did the Calgary Flames absolutely roll over to the Colorado Avalanche in this first round series.
Wow.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. We're part of Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets, Stanley Cup Playoffs Game Day. More on the Jets and the Blues throughout the last hour or plus here on TSN Radio 1290.
But boys, how nuts would it be if all four division winners are out in the first round?
Well, certainly shaping up to be possibilities. We know Tampa's already out. The Flames went out very meekly last night, and both the Predators are tied 2-2 with the Stars.
Meekly or Meek Mill?
Meekly, not Meek Mill. But okay. And the Capitals are tied 2-2 with the Hurricanes. The Flames, to me, you're up against the wall. You're down 3-1 in the series, so you're in trouble already. But to come home on home ice and put up that kind of effort, they were done. They just said, we can't play with this Colorado Avalanche team. And, you know, you can maybe point to the goal that was disallowed as, you know, the turning point in the game last night.
Well, that was a killer.
It's a killer. It's still 3-1 for the Avs at that point in time.
That's a 3-2 game. That's the difference.
It's a killer. I agree with you, though. I mean, was that the turning point, or were the Avalanche just better? Because I would argue the Avalanche were just better.
Certainly
they were
just better.
In the first period, TJ Brody guys scored with 6 seconds left.
Yeah.
And I actually thought, you know, Brody was one of the Flames' best defensemen, and you know, it's to be expected. He's a top four defenseman for them. But when you're talking about, you know, this Avalanche team, I just don't think they had a response for Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, Gabe Landeskog. I mean, for me, the real killer goal was Colin Wilson's second goal. Because he scored two goals in the second period, you know, Winnipeg connection there. So, you know, he was really good in the series. And, you know, Nathan MacKinnon, guys, when you talk about, you know, a guy being dangerous every time he touches the puck, that applies to Nathan MacKinnon. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's certain players that applies to, and it applied to Johnny Gaudreau during the regular season. I mean, Johnny Gaudreau's arguably a Hart Trophy finalist, right? At the very least, he's a top 10 forward in the league, right? Nobody's arguing with that. So, he just wasn't that good in the series, and the top line was not that good. And, you know, you talk about this series here. I mean, I think what's going to stand out to me in this series is how good Philip Grubauer was, how good Nathan MacKinnon was. And at the end of the day, James Neal, healthy scratch in game five. Wow. Austin Zarnik goes in for Calgary in game five. But
the icing on the cake of the worst free agent contract signing of last year.
Well, yeah. And you know what? I realized that, you know, Neal didn't have a very good regular season. I think, you know, he ended the season better than he started the season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to have a guy who's making...
Standing with faint praise.
What's he making, $5 million a year?
For the next 5 years or
right?
something like that?
Yeah. Just, you know, and again, I like Neal. I've always been a Neal fan. I'm not knocking on him. But it's just like that's going to stand out to me when you have a guy like that who was brought in for this exact reason, right? You're talking about a guy who's been in the last two Stanley Cup finals, right, Dave?
Mm-hmm.
So just everything that could have went wrong. And again, Mike Smith was actually really good. Look at Mike Smith's save percentage.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at the end of the series, he was still at around .920.
Well, you talk about that, and that ties into the shots on goal. This is from our buddy Scott Billick last night. Calgary led the NHL with a league-low 28.5. 0.1 shots allowed per game in the regular season. Pretty good, pretty stifling, not giving up a lot in their own zone. They entered Friday's game against the Avalanche, allowing a league-high 43.3 shots per game in that series against the Avalanche. The Avalanche absolutely, top to bottom, dominated the Calgary Flames.
And I think that's the point, Drew. I mean, we're maybe not need to be focusing not necessarily on what Calgary wasn't doing, but it was what Colorado was able to do. And I really think Colorado, from the start of the series to the end, took control. And they really just didn't look back. And, you know, you can say, oh, Colorado snuck in. But, you know, Colorado had some really good stretches of the season. And we know they had some injury problems and, you know, to the top three forwards. And then, obviously, they got everybody back and they were healthy. And they're firing on all cylinders right now. And so you've got a team that has uber talent like they do, and they're just getting it done. So I think sometimes we look at what a team is not doing, but you have to look at what the other team is able to do. And when that team like a Colorado is able to put their stamp on a game like they did throughout this series, to me, there was very little Calgary was going to be able to do to counter that.
And it's funny when you talk about, you know, these series upsets, right?
Yep.
When we were talking about Tampa Bay versus Columbus, it's like, how are they going to shut down the Braden Point line? Right? How are they going to shut down Kucherov? How are they going to shut down Stamkos? All of that depth. You go down to the third line, right, with Anthony Cirelli, and you know, you're talking about how are they going to shut down all of these forwards? And then it turns out it's the opposite, right? It's the Lightning couldn't really get anything going on any of their top lines. And when you're talking about the Flames, I mean, the Triple M line, they actually broke that line up.
Yeah.
Right? They took Michael Frolik off of that line, and they had Elias Lindholm on the second line with Michael Backlund and Matthew Tkachuk. So their top two lines, they weren't clicking. I just think this time of year, Dave, you can have one line that's maybe not producing as well. But when you have your top two lines not producing, we saw that with Calgary. We saw that with Tampa Bay. Yeah. I mean, you're not going to win a series when you have all these matchups. And Nathan MacKinnon, quite simply, was just unstoppable. They just couldn't stop him. He was so good, and Mikko Rantanen was equally as good.
And you wonder whoever the Avalanche play in the next round, whoever the victor is from the Sharks Golden Knights series, and it looks like it's going to be the Golden Knights. You wonder how they're going to be able to slow down that the top line and the best players of the Colorado Avalanche, because they looked absolutely unbeatable in that series against the Calgary Flames. When we come back, goaltender Mike McKenna joins us. He's been here, there, and everywhere throughout his lengthy NHL career. Now he's a podcaster, so he joins us next to talk about his NHL career, his ongoing NHL career. He joins us to talk about his podcast as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets, Stanley Cup Playoff Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets, Stanley Cup Playoff Game Day, the Jets and the Blues. Game six goes later on tonight, a game you can hear live, of course, on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuke. Producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. You can do so also via text message. Send your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program NHL goaltender Mike McKenna. Mike is also the host of a new podcast called 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks a bunch. Out on the East Coast here where I am, it's lunchtime, but good morning to everybody out west there.
Yes, exactly. You're a couple hours ahead of us, and so, you know, let us know the future so that we can prepare accordingly there, Mike. But obviously, we appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us this morning / this afternoon. Wanted to bring you on, talk about what it certainly was an interesting season for you in the NHL and in the AHL, going here, there, and everywhere. So why don't we start with that? I mean, you obviously were with the Ottawa Senators, you were with the Philadelphia Flyers, you were with the Vancouver Canucks. What's that like going from the East Coast to the West Coast to the East Coast and back here, there, and everywhere?
Well, ironically enough, I never changed time zones when it all went down because I was with Ottawa, Vancouver was in the building, and I got traded to Vancouver that night, and the TV crew was nice enough to show me walking down the hallway with my personal possessions in a trash bag to the other hallway, so that was cool. And then We went from Ottawa. I backed up against my former team, who I had morning skated with that day. And so, by the way, I'm wearing completely mismatched gear and look like a total Munson on the ice. I got black and red gear with the Vancouver jersey. The next night, I back up in Montreal, and then after that, we fly to Toronto. We have a day off, and I get put on waivers and claimed by Philly, and that night, I'm in Philly. So it was wild. It was nothing that I expected coming into this year to play for five teams, because I had already started the season in Belleville in the American League for a month and then ended up in Lehigh Valley to finish in the American League. So at 35 years old, that's not what you expect, but anything can happen in this game, and it pretty much did.
You know, Mike, what's it like from the family perspective, right? Because you're married, you have two girls, and you know, Drew's got a couple girls, I've got one, so we can relate to it a little bit. But you mentioned, you know, you played for a couple of American Hockey League teams. You were a member of three different NHL teams. I mean, I guess the obvious question would be, you know, how difficult is that with, you know, having a wife and two young kids? But, I mean, just talk to us about that, because a lot of people don't really think about that when they think of a player who's been traded a couple of times during the year.
Well, it was the hardest 4 months of my life, and I basically was on my own in a hotel and not a care in the world when it came to actually having to take care of my kids and my wife having them for 4 months without any help from me. And, I mean, I'm the cook in the house, so I do all that, and so she had to learn how to make ends meet doing it. And I want to preface this, though, by saying that I realize there's people in life that have it way harder than I did this year, military, other people that go away for a long amount of time. But what's so difficult about what happened to me this year was that it was completely out of my control, and I never knew when there was going to be an end date. I got called up on the 30th of October, and I was already on a road trip, and I went to 2 months in Ottawa. That was only supposed to be 2 weeks. It became open-ended because Mike Condon was hurt and not getting better, and we were finally getting to the point where we thought we were going to get some clarity and either be able to move into Ottawa or something was going to happen one way or another, and then I got traded, and it turned out to be another 2 months away from home and away from them, and it was really dark, to be honest with you. And there's a lot of people that look from the outside and say, oh, you're in the NHL, who cares? You know, well, I value my family more than I value that, to be honest with you. And now, don't get me wrong, being in the NHL is amazing. I was doing everything I could to play the best I can. And, of course, it's nice to get the paycheck, because there are going to be plenty of people that say, oh, you're getting paid a ton. Well, yeah, I am. I mean, I'm not going to quit. That's not in me in any way. I signed up to play and hopefully have a chance at the NHL. But you just hope that when you get that opportunity, your family can come along and you can live together when you're doing it. So it was just a really tough transition for us. And we finally got everybody back under one roof this year, in the last month or so. And so it got a lot easier in that way, and it's felt totally normal. And almost like the 4 months that we weren't together, it was a really distant memory.
And, you know, Mike, you started a new podcast called 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. What's that been like, and have you enjoyed doing that aspect of media?
Yeah, it's been a blast so far, and it's something the last, I don't know, maybe 2 years I've had on the back of my mind, thinking that I've had so many people tell me that I should write a book, given that I've played in 15 organizations and worn 24 jerseys. But books scare me, because you don't want to throw somebody under the bus in the wrong way. You want to make sure you're accurate. And I feel like with podcasting, though, I can get people on that are my friends, that are coworkers, or people that I've admired growing up, and I can get their story and let them tell it, and it lives on forever. And it's been really cool to be able to call up some of my heroes as a kid and ask them if they'd do this, and they answer yes. I mean, I haven't had anybody say no yet, which is unbelievable for a bum like me that they'd want to talk to me. So it's been a lot of fun to do. It's starting to get a little bit of traction, and I truly don't know where it's going to go. It's completely a personal play for me that I wanted to do it, and if it catches on, that's great. But if not, it's a selfish way for me to get to talk to a lot of my heroes.
Mike McKenna is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets, Stanley Cup playoffs, game day, the Jets and the Blues later on tonight on this station. Mike, of course, is an NHL goaltender. He's also a podcaster called 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Mike, I'm not sure how close of an eye you've been keeping on the Stanley Cup playoffs, but last night there were a couple controversial goals, one that was allowed for goaltender interference and one that was disallowed for goaltender interference. That sort of topic, that subject matter, just can't get away from the NHL. I don't know if you saw those two plays, but if you did, what were your thoughts on them?
Yeah, I saw both of them. I didn't see the Calgary Colorado one happened live. I saw the replay, and that one was clear as day. I mean, Bennett skates into the crease, brings the defenseman along with him, takes Grubauer out of position, and it's in the net. All day long, goalie interference. The one with Toronto and Boston, there's a lot of variables going on, but ultimately, in my opinion, it was goalie interference. I don't think there's any way around it. I know I'm a goalie, and then people are going to probably think I'm biased in that way, but what I'm trying to do is interpret the rule book, and I've read that rule over and over again because it seems like it changes every day, but what's written down on paper doesn't. And my whole thing about it was that the NHL explanation for it was that they could not determine from video replay if there had been interference, so they went with a call on the ice. To me, that's not good enough because he got interfered with, period. He got hit by an opposing player who came into his crease by himself. He wasn't pushed in by a Boston player. Their guy initiated the contact. Rask was in his crease when it happened, and it was a bang-bang play, yes. And Rask didn't get a good push to the other side. The puck might have gone in the net anyway, even if he hadn't been interfered with. But the problem is that you have to allow the goaltender to at least have a chance to do so. And under the way the rules are written, I thought that 100% this is goalie interference. There's no way this is going to count. And that's not what happened. So I'm in the dark a little bit. I'm not really sure, and I wish that the explanation had been in greater detail from the NHL so I could have some peace of mind about why they called it a goal.
You know, Mike, you're, of course, born in St. Louis, and we're all about the Jets-Blues series right now. And I wanted to ask you about Jordan Binnington, because obviously he's been one of the best stories in net this year. And when you talk about Binnington, you know, he spent a lot of time in the American Hockey League, similar to you. But as a goaltender, how nice has it been to see Binnington emerge as the number one goaltender and have such a great year for the Blues?
I'm always excited to see anybody get a chance and make good on it, especially someone who's been incubating in the American League for a long time. And, you know, I'm not sure why Binnington hadn't had more juice behind him previously, because looking at his numbers, he'd always played well in the American League and just never gotten a chance. And I'm not sure why that was the case. And I also can't really make a great assessment on him, too, because I never played against him in the American League. When he was in the Western Conference, I was in the East. And conversely, when I was in the West last year, he was in the East. And as you know, having the Moose in Manitoba, there's very little crossover. There's a little bit with Manitoba because they fly everywhere, but most teams don't at all. So it's like two different worlds. But it's great to see, and it's nice, though, especially as a hometown person from St. Louis, to see people excited about how they're doing as a team. And, you know, there's been goalies along the way that have done that, too. I mean, Andrew Hammond's run and some other guys, and It's always nice to see those people who have put the time and effort in get rewarded.
You know, Mike, here in Winnipeg, I've talked to Connor Hellebuck, I've talked to Eric Comrie about their goalie masks, and some guys like Hellebuck put a lot of thought into it. Eric has told me that he just trusts his mask designer to kind of come up with a design. He has a little bit of input, not a tremendous amount. As someone who, like you said, have been through so many organizations, is there one mask? Well, first of all, are you a guy who has a lot of input in your mask? And secondly, are you a kind of guy who, is there one mask in particular that you're proud of?
Well, I love them all, probably like children, but I think the most important one to me is the season that I spent in the St. Louis Blues organization. Even though I didn't go up to the Blues, I was in Peoria the whole time. That mask is really special because it was my chance to design a helmet for the team I grew up loving. And so their sentimentality is huge on that one. But for myself, though, my mask painter, Ray Bishop, pretty much knows what I want. And the reason being is that I grew up in a family that was involved with auto racing. My dad did that. And when you watch racing, you can usually identify a driver by their helmet. And it used to be like this with goalies as well. You think of Belfour, Potvin, Cujo, Turco, Brodeur, all these guys had iconic masks that you knew who was in the net on the ice, and you could tell what it was from the grandstands. Nowadays, a lot of the mask just looks like somebody puked on the thing, and there's lines everywhere, and you have no idea what it is. And so my design is really clean, and it's basically just transferred from team to team. We change the colors, we change the logos, but my mask was based off of an old racing helmet from a guy named Jeff Ward, who competed in the Indy Racing League and did some motocross stuff, too. And I've just kept that design pretty much my whole career.
Mike McKenna is an NHL goaltender. He is the host of a podcast called 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. We encourage you to check that out wherever you get your podcast. Mike, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. I really appreciate it, guys. Anytime.
Thanks, Mike. Take care. All righty, you've been waiting all morning for it. It's now time for our Saturday morning You Bet Your Jet Will Call You bonus play. If you texted You Bet and your phone number to 129090 at any point in time this past week, we could be calling you right now. Stand by as we reach out to play You Bet Your Jet next on your radio home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. The Jets having had completed their morning skate, and I can tell you the following lineup news. Nothing. Paul Maurice would not confirm anything whatsoever. Nikolai Ehlers was not on the ice. Which he said is exactly what would happen. Par Lindholm was on the ice. Mason Appleton was on the ice. Matt Hendricks was on the ice. Dustin Byfuglien was not on the ice.
The Zamboni driver was on the ice.
Patrick Laine was not on the ice. But Paul Maurice,
Maurice was on the ice.
As was the custom during the playoffs, would say absolutely nothing about the Jets lineup. Again, based on historical precedent.
5:30 tonight. That's when you'll find out.
Yes, 5:30 is when they'll take their game day skate or their warm-up pregame skate, their warm-up skate. You would expect that both Ehlers and Lindholm will take that.
Charlie Huddy was on the ice.
Ehlers and Lindholm, I'd expect, would both take that skate, and then obviously they will decide if he is good to go, for the game or not on tomorrow.
Basically, Nikolai Ehlers is a game time decision, right? Mike McIntyre tweeted it out. So that's the big question mark here, that Nikolai Ehlers is going to be a game time decision. But, you know, we talked about it earlier, Dave. I mean, if Paul Maurice can't go to Nikolai Ehlers, what does he do? I mean, does that change the TLC line? Does he break up the TLC line? I think what makes the most sense is that we might see Matty Perreault on the second line, but we've seen Jack Roslovic on the second line as well. And I actually think Roslovic has played really well. Fourth line didn't get a lot of ice time in Game 5. Do we see even less in Game 6?
Well, and what Kenny Weeb of the Winnipeg Sun is saying is that Perreault, Hayes, and Roslovic stayed together during the morning skate, so he believes that if Lindholm does come in, this is just based on what
it has creating, to be on the fourth
it
line.
It would be Lindholm, Little, and Laine.
I can't for the life of me see them going Carl Lindholm up there.
Well, I'm reading Ken's tweet. I can't change what Ken's tweeting.
Well, I don't disagree with Drew, because when you're talking about Lindholm, really great defensive responsible forward, but Par Lindholm is not exactly an offensive ace.
Yeah, he's got zero
goals.
So
I would think it makes sense to put either Perreault or Roslovic on the second line if Ehlers can't go.
To me, it's got to be Perreault, and you take your medicine. In terms of a fourth line that's probably not going to play a lot of minutes, or maybe you see, you know, them cycle Kevin Hayes through some extra forward lines or something. I mean, I'm not 100% sure how they're going to handle that, but you can't have Par Lindholm in an elimination game playing on the on a second line role at that point in time. I mean, it's just not a possibility, and the defense is going to stay status quo. You know, for better or worse, Dmitry Kulikov is going to be in the Jets lineup. I don't see them all of a sudden moving to a Joe Morrow at this point. You know, they've made their bed with Kulikov. This is their top six defense. It has been all season
long.
Would
Joe Morrow even be the next guy in?
Well,
you got a free Sammy Niku at that point.
Playing on the left side where he's not as comfortable.
That's true.
But I'm serious, though. I mean, Nathan Beaulieu was on the top pair with Jacob Trouba. I mean, I honestly don't know the answer to that.
I would lean towards Beaulieu.
Comes in over Morrow?
Yeah. I think it's between those two. I mean, I think those are the only options.
Those are the only options. There's no question that those are the only options. It's just a matter of, I mean, I don't know which one comes in.
I would think, when was the last
time? Yeah,
that's why I
said that.
Yeah.
But when was the last time Joe Morrow played a game? Like, you're going to
put his injury.
You're putting Beaulieu in front.
That's what I would. I would probably lean towards Beaulieu. But it goes back to what you said, though, Drew. I don't think that's happening. Game 6, Dmitry Kulikov, I mean, even though he hasn't been the Jets' best defenseman, you could argue that he's been the Jets' weakest defenseman. I think at this point, you're sticking with that third pair.
I would agree with you. I think we have our caller for You Bet Your Jet. Good morning, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, good morning.
What's your name?
Logan.
Logan, well, congratulations. Earlier today, you texted You Bet and your number to 129090. We just drew your number from all those who have texted in so far. Logan, where are you calling from, in Winnipeg, or I guess outside of Winnipeg, as the case may be?
Sunny St. James.
Sunny St. James.
Kind of sunny.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm glad.
My dad and sister are in St. James, Logan, so a fine neighborhood.
There you go. You can just go around and say, are you Ezzy's sister? Are you Ezzy's dad to anybody you see?
Maybe Logan and I will have some beers at Silver Heights tonight.
Maybe you will. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Well, Logan, congratulations. Just for being our contestant, you've won a legendary 10-inch spicy pierogi pizza from Boston Pizza. Just for being our Saturday morning, we'll call you bonus qualifier. And now we're going to give you a chance to win some great prizes and big cash. Here's how it works, Logan. Today on You Bet Your Jet, we're featuring the three Jets players who have been selected least often in this contest. Dmitry Kulikov, Nathan Beaulieu, and Kevin Hayes.
Yoo-hoo.
I'm going to ask you a skill testing question about the Jet you select. You get it right, you'll win some great prizes. Then, as long as you get the question right, we'll play a random highlight from this season. If your Jets player scores, you'll instantly win $1,000 cash. Now, you bet your Jet. Logan, who will you select? Dmitry Kulikov, Nathan Beaulieu, or Kevin Hayes?
Well, don't take Kulikov. He didn't score a goal. So, I mean, why is he on there?
Thanks for that one. I think I'll go with Kevin Hayes.
Kevin Hayes, already off to that's a solid start so far. Here's the skill testing question. Logan, if you get it right, you win a pair of tickets to see Thomas Rhett at Bell MTS Place on May 4th, plus a Royal Sports gift card and a white Jets platinum stretch cap. Here's the question, Logan. True or false? Kevin Hayes was acquired from the New York Rangers, but he was originally drafted by the Chicago Blackhawks. True or false?
Oh, I will say true.
That is correct, Logan. Congratulations. You have won
attaboy, Logan.
That pair of tickets to see Thomas Rhett at Bell MTS Place on May 4th, plus that Royal Sports gift card and the White Jets platinum stretch cap. You've advanced to the big cash round. We're going to play a random highlight from earlier this season, obviously after the trade deadline, because that's when the Jets acquired him. If Kevin Hayes scores, you win $1,000. You ready, Logan?
Come on, Kevin.
You got your fingers crossed?
Fingers and toes.
Attaboy. Okay, let's roll it. Let's hope for Kevin Hayes scoring. Let's play the clip.
Left side for Beaulieu. Beaulieu will hit center ice, and he'll send this in. Lining off the boards in front for Hayes, and it was just beyond his reach, or Hayes had an open net tap-in.
Oh, Logan, I thought you had it, man. But you're still doing pretty well for a Saturday morning. You have that legendary spicy pierogi Boston pizza. You got the tickets to see Thomas Rhett at Bell MTS Place. You got that Royal Sports gift card and a White Jets platinum stretch cap. Logan, congratulations, buddy.
Thanks, boys.
See you at Silver Heights, Logan.
Logan, hang on the line. The Toronto Star is going to get some more information from you. Congratulations again. Stay tuned Monday morning, the next opportunity to play You Bet Your Jet here on TSN Radio 1290. You know, it was good of you, Ezzy, though, to give a little bit of a hint there because Kulikov hasn't scored this year.
Come on.
By the way, neither has Beaulieu.
Well, Beaulieu hasn't.
Who's writing these questions? I mean, why is Kulikov in there? We're gonna play a goal clip for a goal that never happened?
Well, maybe last year. Did he score last year? I don't even remember if Kulikov scored.
Kulikov would have.
He had a couple, maybe.
One or two last year. He certainly would be a needle in the haystack, as it would be for goals by Dmitry Kulikov. Anyways, the Jets and the Blues.
Three goals last year.
Three goals. He was an offensive dynamo last year.
Yeah.
You know, just over $1.5 million for each of those goals. You know, obviously the Jets and the
That's
Blues
funny.
Later on tonight, game six here on TSN Radio 1290. It is the first elimination game of this series between the Jets and the Blues. It's obviously going to be a key one. The Jets need to pull out another victory. They need to turn it to six straight games where the road team has won in order to force a game seven back here in Winnipeg on Monday night.
Right. We talked about, you know, the top line of Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler. They're going to have to be better than they were in game five, and they were excellent in games three and four in St. Louis, and I think you'd like to see more out of the TLC line. But guys, Agreed. We know that the Jets have been better on the road in the series. So I think that's what you're trying to channel for game six. And I think there's every reason to believe that the Jets are going to take game six, not just because every away team has won the games in this series. I think it's because, you know, the Jets played really well for parts of game five, even though, you know, I really did think the Blues deserved to win game five, especially with the way they responded. Well, they responded so well after they went down 2-0. They had all the pressure. Connor Hellebuck was excellent in period one and period two. I don't think he was necessarily bad in period three, but it wasn't a great period for him, but it was period one where the Blues really brought it on. So I think, you know, the Jets are obviously going to look for that more of a 60-minute effort. And, you know, that's something that we've seen, unfortunately, too much out of this Jets team, that they haven't been able to put together three consecutive periods. But we did see that in games three and games four. So I think if you're a Jets fan, that's what you have to be optimistic about, that the Jets really did respond well in games three and four. And they've played really well on the road in this series and all year long.
It'll be interesting, obviously, more on the Jets and the Blues to come. But when we come back, Adam Vingan of The Athletic joins us. The Stars and the Predators are knotted up at two games apiece. They have game five later on this afternoon. Adam joins us to talk about that other Central Division playoff series. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets, Stanley Cup Playoff Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Busy show, busy day. The Jets and the Blues later on tonight, shortly after 6 o'clock puck drop between these two teams, as the game 6 in this, what has been a pretty epic first round series, will have its first elimination game. The Jets looking to stave off elimination. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. Producer Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board, trying to get hold of Adam Vingan to talk about the upcoming Game 5 between the Predators and the Stars. You know, that Game 4, though, was an absolute embarrassment at the hands of the Nashville Predators, pardon me, but the hands of the Dallas Stars, embarrassing to the Predators. It's now a best of three series there, and it's sort of been, you know, Nashville is in it at two games apiece, but they certainly haven't been playing well in that series.
Yeah, especially the top line, right? We talked about it on the Wednesday show, and you know, Dallas is, as to their credit, really elevated their game, right? And you know, Matt Zuccarello has been an impact. Rupe Hintz has been an impact, and we talked about it a lot previewing the series, right? The offense that they get from the Stars defensemen. You're talking about John Klingberg. You're talking about Miro Heiskanen. You're talking who am I missing here, Drew?
Esa Lindell.
I mean, they've got a defense that likes to jump up into the play. Ben Bishop has outplayed Pekka Rinne, and it's really surprising when you talk about Pekka Rinne, because he's had really good games and he's had really bad games. And we'll talk to Adam Vingan here, but Rinne is going to start game five this afternoon.
Now let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline
from theathletic.com. He covers the Nashville Predators. We're pleased to be joined by our good friend Adam Vingan. Adam, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure, Adam. Obviously, game five between these two teams. Series tied two games apiece after the Stars gave the Preds a good butt-whipping on Wednesday night. Pekka Rinne gets the start in goal for the Predators after getting pulled in game four. How short is the leash on him entering tonight's game, or this afternoon's game five?
I don't think the leash there. I don't honestly don't think there should be any leash, because the outcome of game four, personally, I don't think Pekka should bear any responsibility for what happened in front of him. His team surrendered, I believe, four power plays in the first 12 and a half to 13 minutes of the game. Three of the four goals that the Stars scored in the first period were power play goals. You know, the defense was spotty. His teammates were undisciplined. And I don't care which goaltender you are, if you're put in that situation, you're not going to perform well. I mean, considering that he had a 9.36 save percentage and 1.98 goals against average entering game four, says all you need to say about how Pekka Rinne has played in this series. Quite frankly, if it weren't for him in game three, when the Predators put together one of their worst defensive performances in some time, they would potentially be facing elimination today. I mean, he stole game three for them. So there was no hesitation to put him back in net for game five. So I know it doesn't look good, because this was the seventh time in his past 22 postseason starts that he's been pulled, dating back to the Stanley Cup final, but I don't put this one on him at all.
Adam, you know, you mentioned the defensive performance by the Predators, and I think you'd agree that the Dallas Stars have been just absolutely peppering Pekka Rinne with shots. And for you, what's been the biggest issue? Is it just the speed, or are the Predators just too loose defensively? Because it looks like right now the Stars are clearly the better offensive team.
The Stars, for lack of a better phrase, are rising to the occasion. The Stars have recently loaded up that top line with Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, and Alex Radulov, which they would often do in times of crisis during the season when they needed offense. And they've been together for the past couple of games, and they've played really well. And the Predators have really been powerless to stop them. You know, I look at some of the, if you're looking at defensemen specifically, Mattias Ekholm has been as steady as can be for years. You know, arguably one of the most underrated defensive defensemen, quote unquote, in the NHL over the past few years. He's been absolutely awful in this series, terrible. And you know, Ryan Ellis and Roman Josi as a pair, you know, haven't really offered much resistance either. I mean, PK Subban has clearly been this team's best defenseman and arguably their best skater in this series. So some of that has to do with if you're looking at the defensive core specifically, but if you're looking at team defense, you know, they just haven't been smart. You know, they've been burned a couple times, and the defense in front of Pekka has been spotty at best. It is really hard to explain, because while the Stars, you know, came into the series, you know, as one of the best defensive teams in the league in the second half of the season, so were the Predators. So really, it's just sort of the Predators not being able to keep up in that regard.
You know, Adam, and when you're not able to keep up, you take penalties, and the Predators have been shorthanded 19 times in the playoffs, tied for fourth most in out of the 16 teams. Is it just that they're not skating? What is it that this team is doing? Because I noticed in the regular season, I think they weren't in the top 10 for penalties taken, and even though they have a good PK, obviously it's not a place you want to be in the postseason.
Well, last year, I believe they were the most penalized team in the NHL. So, you know, they weren't as bad this year, but, you know, they have a recent history of being pretty terrible getting into the, in terms of parading into the penalty box. But, you know, you look at some of the fouls, you look at some of the penalties in the first game. Mattias Ekholm takes a high-sticking penalty at the start of game four. You know, you could argue that maybe it was a follow-through that caught a player up high. Philip Forsberg, you know, without much pressure on him, lost the puck out of play from his own end for a delay of game. Whether or not you want to agree with the quality of the calls, I always say that whether or not the call was justified, you still put yourself in a position to have the penalty called, and that often seems to be the case for the Predators this series. Even if the calls haven't been valid, they're still in that position to get those penalties called on them, which is something that they need to be cognizant of. If this series is played at 5-on-5, the Predators have been the better team, I think, 5-on-5, slightly, but I still think they've been the better team 5-on-5. So as long as they can stay away from the penalties troubles, they should be okay, but they haven't proven to do that yet.
Adam Vingan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Predators and Stars series. Game 5 of that series goes this afternoon. And, of course, Game 6 between the Jets and the Blues goes later on tonight, a game you can hear live on this station. Adam, entering Game 5 of this series, if I told you that Arvidsson has 0 points, Johansson has 0 goals, Philip Forsberg only has 1 goal, and Granlund only has 1 goal, would you say to me that the Predators are really fortunate to be deadlocked at 2 apiece as opposed to actually being down in the series?
Yeah, I would say they're fairly fortunate to be where they are, because I think the Stars have been the better team 3 of the 4 games in the series. I think game 2 was the only game in the series where you could say without hesitation that the Predators were the better team. But I saw an interesting stat last night from the points website talking about the first 2 games of the series versus the last 2 games of the series. In the first 2 games of the series, the Stars surrendered 33 shots in the slot combined in games 1 and 2. In games 3 and 4, they allowed to find 6 shots in the slot, 5 in each game. So they've locked down defensively, which is and that line specifically, the Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson line, does its best work from those particular areas, and they have not been able to get there. And no line from the Predators has really been able to get there with regularity. So, you know, the Predators have switched up some of their forward lines. That top line remains intact, but it appears that Cole Cousins, for example, is going to center a second line today with Kyle Granlund and Callie Yarncroke. Kyle Turris has been effectively demoted to fourth line center, which is a further indictment of his play this season. Even that same system, you know, Watson line, that shutdown line that's been coasting with reputation since last year's series in Colorado, was broken up. Craig Smith, who scored the overtime winner in game 2, is going to play on that line with Austin Watson and Nick Bonino. So, a way to get some offense, maybe just to balance out some of the secondary scoring, but after staying with the same lines for the first 4 games, minus some injuries, Pierre Laviolette shook them up in practice yesterday.
Adam Vingan, your colleague John Glennon wrote about how the Predators have been really good at bouncing back after losing by four or more goals. They actually did that five times during the regular season, and they won four games when they lost by four or more goals. So if you're the Predators, you're in that dressing room prior to the game, is that what you're kind of rallying around, the fact that you've lost games before by a big margin, but you were able to rebound and win the next game?
I mean, this group's been through everything that you could possibly think of, I think, in the past 4 years in the playoffs. I mean, think about, think about game five of the Winnipeg series. I think they lost 6-2 or 5-1 or something like that. And then the following game, Bell MTS plays, and they went 4-0. I mean, they've done that.
You know, Adam, sorry, your phone is cutting in and out pretty poorly right now. So we're gonna let you go. We appreciate your time this morning. We appreciate your insight, but the phone's cutting in and out pretty badly. We'll let you get ready for game five between the Stars and the Predators, and we do appreciate your time this morning.
All right. Sorry. Thanks, guys.
All good, Adam. Thanks again for joining us. You know, cell phones are great and then sometimes not so great.
Right. And it's unfortunate that Adam wasn't able to finish his last answer. But, you know, really interesting when you look at how the Predators have been able to bounce back after losing by four more goals. And really, we haven't seen momentum carry over in the series, right? It's anybody's series right now, guys. And the Stars, as you mentioned in your question to Adam, the Stars could easily be up 3-1.
Yeah.
I mean, the Stars have played really well and the Predators haven't, right? I mean,
Predators team all season long, even though they finished atop the division and won the Central Division, it's weird.
Well, yeah,
not a good vibe.
It has
been
weird, right? Because you're coming off of the 117 point season.
Yeah.
You're coming off of that really disappointing round two loss to the Jets, but they were still a favorite.
Yeah.
And I agree with you, Drew. I mean, has there ever been a team that's won a division where you were kind of underwhelmed, right? Because the Jets looked like for all year long they were going to win the division, and then St. Louis really just emerged in the second half.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about the Stars team, I mean, they were really good in the second half of the season. Ben Bishop specifically, but also, I mean, you're talking about, you know, the old, Tyler Seguin, and Jamie Benn didn't have a great year. I mean, his offensive numbers were down this year.
Yeah.
And when you're talking about Matt Zuccarello, obviously, you know, he was injured right after they acquired him, but he's been really good when you're talking about kind of that secondary scoring. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the Predators respond from game four, because Pekka Rinne wasn't good after he was sensational in game three. I think this is turning into be a very fascinating series, because I think a lot of people, you know, had the Predators winning in five or six games, maybe seven games, but it looks like right now Dallas has the upper hand.
I think it's a fascinating series that nobody's talking about, to be honest with you.
Really?
I really do. I honestly think this is it's one of those situations where everybody's focused on, you know, they were focused on Colorado, Calgary. They were focused on Winnipeg, St. Louis.
Boston, Toronto.
Toronto, of course, out east.
Tampa Bay and the Islanders doing what they did to
exactly. So I really think that nobody is paying. I mean, obviously, aside from.
It's been good hockey.
But I'm saying that aside from the people in those cities, I really don't think a lot of people are paying attention. Now, it's not necessarily a bad thing. I just think, like, sometimes it's good to be, you know, kind of come in there and be underwhelming and not a lot of people focused on you. Gives you an opportunity to come into that next round and catch some people off guard.
If you're the Preds, I think you have to be very fortunate. You have to feel very fortunate that you're tied up at 2-2 apiece and you still have home ice advantage. You go home this afternoon and you can get rid of the bad feelings from what was a terrible game four. Be interesting to see if they can do that, though, because the Dallas Stars have to be saying in their dressing room, hey, you know, we should be up more, keep doing what we've been doing in this series, and we're going to end up victorious in this series. When we come back, one final segment, we touch on the Capitals and the Hurricanes. We'll talk about the Golden Knights and the Sharks, and we'll talk about, of course, the Jets and the Blues. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Industrial Metals, Winnipeg Jets, Stanley Cup Playoff Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio. 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One final segment Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Stanley Cup Playoff Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. He's been absolutely killing it. Rob Bebenek in town. Two shows, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Be sure to get your tickets, and for him and for all upcoming shows, including the special event just announced with Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Get tickets available at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Bring your own 2-4.
Shouldn't you have 2x4?
That's what I meant.
Yeah. As he comes,
you're not allowed to bring your own 2x4.
Is what I meant.
You're not allowed to bring your own 2-4, but you can bring your own 2x4.
Shouldn't you punctuate that by a hello?
Yeah, I was going to, but I didn't know if I'd be able to pull it off. So, and you apparently had practiced that before the show.
Come on.
So
the Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
That's a classic.
And then we got a USA chant going in the whole 9 yards.
Is he going to be wearing his blue shorts and his blue boots?
Probably, if you ask him nicely, you know, maybe he will. I'm not sure. The only one to find out, and that's to buy tickets at rumorscomedyclub.com. One final segment, just a couple minutes we got to go before the top of the hour here, boys. Let me ask you guys this about tonight's Jets game. You know, the post-game comments from the Jets in the third period to me after the game, after the collapse, were a little bizarre, saying, you know, we were the better of the two teams in the third period. We liked our game. We, you know, it was just a pinball of a puck. I don't know what they were watching or the, you know, what the mindset is in that room. If it's just about 100%, we're only going to be positive, 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 even in the face of evidence that declares otherwise. But do you think the Blues might have a bit of a chip on their shoulder that the Jets weren't necessarily respecting them, respecting their comeback in game 5?
I take the Jets players' comments after the game with a grain of salt, because we know that Connor Hellebuck is never going to be happy when a game finishes like that, right? We know that Hellebuck wants to stop every puck.
And he's never going to give praise to the opponent's shot. It's always, you know, it's never that it was a great shot that beat me. It was always something else, which is his business.
Right. Hellebuck's a confident guy. And same thing goes for the other players that spoke after. Right, guys? The way that game ended, what do you expect the Jets players to say? I mean, oh, we love losing with 15 seconds left. Oh, that was great. Losing game 5, being down 3-2, going to St. Louis, awesome. I mean, they were better than we were, right? And I'm not being sarcastic, right? I mean, we've been doing this show for 10 years, Drew. I mean, I never take what the players say after games too seriously, regardless if it's the regular season or the playoffs. But I understand what you're saying. They were a little peculiar.
They're a little dismissive of the Blues' effort. Now you don't have to praise the Blues to the high heavens, but you can say that, you know, there's elements of our game that we need to better, you know, to close out a game without at the same time diminishing, I think, the efforts of the opponent. I wonder if they maybe diminished the efforts of the Blues a little too much.
They were just pissed off. I mean, I think they were pissed off with the way that game ended. I mean, that's the way, if you want to simplify it down to, you know, what do you really read into it? I think they're mad and they want to get back to it and they want to win game 6. But I agree with you. I mean, sure, they weren't really giving the Blues much credit, mm-hmm. but I really think you can chalk that up to, you know, I don't know if you want to call it maybe being poor losers.
Dave, quickly.
No, I mean, I agree with Ezzy. You got to always take it with a grain of salt. I'm not one who, first of all, I don't know how much, quote, chalkboard material. Nobody uses a chalkboard anyways, but how much
whiteboard
material you're going to get out of any of the things that were said.
That's it for this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests who joined us. Mike McIntyre, Dave McCarthy, Andy Graziano, Mike McKenna, and Adam Vingan. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website. It's on tsn1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, get it sent to your device each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Great job on the board today by producer Sean Asor. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and thanks for listening to Industrial Metals Winnipeg Jets Stanley Cup Playoffs Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.